Hi everyone, welcome to today's very special episode of Heart, Home, Faith. If you've been following me on Instagram, you'll have seen my episode promo for this particular episode. In this episode, I'm talking with Nina Gassow, who is so incredibly knowledgeable when it comes to this very difficult topic: eating disorders, recovery, healing, and hope. These are the things that as Christians we are meant to bring to the world: healing and hope. And that applies to our relationship with food. I know, the relationship with the basic needs can become disordered. When we chat, Nina was so kind to share her experiences, but to not be judgmental. In no way is this episode about putting anybody down who is recovering from an eating disorder, who is starting to recover from an eating disorder, or who thinks that maybe it's time for them to reach out, to grab a hand, and to seek help from their disordered eating patterns. This episode is so important to me because I know so many women, especially, who at various points in their lives have struggled with this idea of body image, this idea of health, and this idea of weight and worth and eating. It all connects, and we can give it all to Jesus. But this episode isn't just for people who are Catholic. Though this episode, of course, takes the lens of faith as its primary focus, I want you to feel comfortable knowing that this episode is being produced for everyone. Not only for women, but also for men who suffer from disordered eating as well. Not only for grown women or teenage women, but for 5 and 6 and 7 year old girls who are struggling with their body image. This is a true tragedy in American culture, and we have to do something about it. So regardless of your faith background, please know that we are coming at this from our Catholic faith background, but that doesn't mean that this is not for you. I hope that you enjoy this conversation with Nina Gassow from Annunciation Wellness, and I hope that you know that you are so loved, that you were made so beautifully, that you were made so perfectly, and that there's help and healing for you or for your loved ones who need it. And not only that, you deserve to reach out, to take a hand, and to have somebody walk with you on your disordered eating journey or the journey of a loved one who's experiencing this. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Hi, Nina. Thank you so much for being a guest on Heart, Home, Faith.
Hello, Olivia. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
I am just truly so excited to talk about this topic. One of the things I promised myself this season was that I wasn't going to shy away from hard topics. And I think that culturally and in the midst of a pandemic and just like, I'm also 30 weeks pregnant right now. Well, I'm 29 weeks and 5 days. So 30 weeks pregnant right now. So like body image is a really weird thing when you're this pregnant. But you know, I know so many women who struggled with disordered eating, eating disorders, and it's so much more common than people might think. And so I'm so excited to have you share your knowledge with us today.
Well, and I'm so happy to be here and talking about this. It's definitely a topic that is near and dear to my heart. And you're right. I think disordered eating and eating disorders often go untalked about, and they're a lot more prevalent than one would imagine. So I'm glad to be here answering all your questions.
Yeah. You know, it's so my younger sister, she was a collegiate athlete. She ran cross country in college. And so every year when it's like National Eating Disorder Awareness Week, she's like, you guys have got to talk about this. And especially people who are, you know, athletic, like we have to talk about this too. It's not just for people who feel like they're overweight or, you know, who maybe are overweight. Like it's for people who are
really, really athletic and are, you know, performing at a high level too, which I think is really interesting because I don't think a lot of people think about it that way. But yeah, so she's really opened my eyes to how many people struggle with this because she was in that world of, you know, people trying to be their lightest so they could run their fastest and make different times. And it's just, it's a really bizarre thing, but it, you know, it affects everybody.
It does for sure. And yeah, athletes can be affected much more than we even realize. It's such a pervasive issue, and it can kind of, eating disorders and disordered behaviors with food can really kind of hide behind that guise of health and fitness. And so sometimes we look at people and think, wow, they must be so healthy, but we don't know what they're struggling with on the inside. So yeah, it's definitely something we should talk about more openly, so we know when people are struggling with those thoughts behind food. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. So I wanted to just talk to you for just our first question. You know, like, I think that a lot of women know kind of the basics. Like, we know about anorexia, we know about bulimia, but we only really would recognize them in maybe an extreme case. You know, like, we'd only maybe recognize it if somebody was anorexic and was hospitalized for it type situation, just in our regular worlds. But, you know, I'm also aware there's many, many different types of disordered eating, from, you know, like the super intense calorie counters to the crazy exercise, like, you know, oh, I'm going to eat a slice of pizza, so I have to run so many miles to earn it type mentality. Like, I'm aware that this exists because I've heard it and, you know, I've lived some of it. And so I'm really curious, what would you say are the hallmarks of disordered eating? Like, what are things that we should look out for both in ourselves and in the people that we love, our friends, our family members? Like, what should we look out for when it comes to a disordered relationship with food?
That's a great question. So disordered eating really describes abnormal eating behaviors that don't fully fit that criteria for an eating disorder, kind of what you talked about. So really the main difference between disordered eating and what we know as eating disorders is just the frequency and severity of symptoms. And I think that reflects why it is so important to know what to look out for, because if a disordered eating behavior goes unchecked, it will most likely develop into a more severe eating disorder. So this is really a time where we can intervene in our own lives or in our loved ones' lives and make a huge difference. So really, the first behaviors I'll talk about are what we probably traditionally know as an eating disorder. So restrictive patterns with food, binging with food, or purging. Those are those classic eating disorder behaviors that are still present in disordered eating, but again, just maybe not to the same frequency. But if there's any kind of restricting, binging, or certainly purging happening, even if it's not something that happens every single day or multiple times a day, it's still problematic. And for most people, that's still significantly impacting their quality of life. So other important behaviors to look out for: eating for reasons other than hunger. So we have to always kind of be thinking about our motivation for why we choose to eat and whether or not that's problematic. So some examples there could be if you are eating because you're bored, eating to deal with stress, or eating to cover up emotions. So really talking about eating as a coping mechanism. And I will fully acknowledge that it is within the spectrum of normal to occasionally do these things, right? So if you're thinking to yourself, my goodness, I ate chocolate one time because I'm stressed, do I have disordered eating? Not necessarily. Really, you have to be assessing, is this something that I always turn to deal with stress? Am I always turning towards food to deal with loneliness or boredom? That's when we know that it's disordered eating.
Gotcha. Other
things, so rigid, abnormal patterns with food. So eating the same thing every single day, people that skip meals, excluding food groups, and really any type of strict dieting behavior. That's a warning flag for myself as a clinician and should be a warning flag to us. And then the last thing that I'll mention here is there, of course, is a cognitive element with disordered eating and eating disorders because they are mental illnesses. So any type of cognitive distortion is something to look out for in ourselves and our loved ones. So by that, I mean negative thinking about food, negative thinking about our body. That is definitely going to be a hallmark of disordered eating and eating disorders. And then lastly, some other mental health issues to be aware of. Self-esteem issues, depression, and anxiety around food are often linked to disordered eating and certainly eating disorders. So hopefully that kind of gives an overall picture of the things that we should be watching out for in ourselves and certainly in our loved ones.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's funny because like so many of us this past year have had our worlds turned completely upside down and we've had like, we're home. Like, what do we even do? And so I think those first few months were really, really challenging for me because it was like, well, I don't know even how to cope with this. And so it was like, all right, well, let's have a drink after dinner and let's do this because I don't know what else to do. And finding healthier ways to cope with my emotions has definitely been really, really awesome because, well, I'm pregnant, so I'm not drinking right now. And I haven't been since I found out I was pregnant. But like, you know, just having the awareness of what am I doing and why am I doing it is so important when it comes to not only our relationship with food, but like everything. Like,
absolutely.
Why do we have these habits? Why are we doing this? Like, you can learn so much about yourself when you think, why am I turning to this thing? Like, even if it's not food, like, why am I turning to this thing? And then you learn so much. Okay. So you brought up actually another thing that I really want to ask because I feel like there is this push for health. Like almost culturally our society says like healthy people, like be healthy, like healthy people are the best people. Well, yeah, of course we all want to be healthy, right? Like no one wants to be ill. No one wants to be unhealthy. That's not a label we want. But how would you say the idea of health is tied into eating disorders? And then could you describe like what healthy eating is?
Yeah, absolutely. So health, it's funny. Health can be a great disguise for an eating disorder. So I think if the idea of health has anything to do with perfection, so eating perfectly, being a perfect weight, we know that that idea of health is crossing over into dangerous territory. Health should always be about taking care of our bodies. So the question that I like to ask my clients is, are you able to do all of the things that you need to do, the things that you want to do? And that should be our assessment of, are we healthy? Are we living in a healthy body? Being a perfect weight or eating perfect food isn't really health. That's crossing over into that disordered realm. So that's when the idea of health can become kind of dangerous, to be honest. And to answer your question about like, what is healthy eating?
Yeah. Like what is this? I mean, like how many healthy eating diets are there? I'm sorry. I'm confused by all of them. Like, wait, so gluten's bad and everyone should do paleo, but now gluten is good, but you shouldn't do this. Like I'm confused. If you have a gluten allergy, don't eat gluten, right? But like please explain to me in real people terms, because I get really confused by the fad diets that pop out and that we hear about.
I think sometimes our tendency is to believe that like the idea of healthy eating must be so complex, right? Like there has to be a secret out there that I don't know because it can't be easy. But truly, healthy eating is about fueling your body and allowing yourself enjoyment with food. So I think those two things are very, very important. The idea of healthy eating is not eating for any reason other than my body needs food, and seeking enjoyment out of that is completely appropriate. So there are different facets of healthy eating, like what we eat and why we eat. But I think I was working in a treatment center when I first started, and I was holding a nutrition group, and we were talking about like how do I know what to eat and when to eat. And I love this quote that we gave to our clients. So it was, sometimes I will eat a little less, sometimes I'll eat a little more, and sometimes I'll eat a cookie just because I feel like it. And I love that because that's healthy eating to me. I think that describes it perfectly. So we shouldn't be calorie counting or checking what we're eating every single day, checking our weight every day. That's not healthy, because sometimes our bodies are going to need a little bit more food. Sometimes our bodies are going to need a little bit less, depending on how active we are. If you're pregnant, something like that, these major life shifts, our bodies are going to need different amounts of food. And it's our job to roll with that and to give ourselves a little bit of grace when it comes to eating. So I love that quote, because that's healthy eating. And I think sometimes when people hear that, they're like, no, it has to be more complicated than that. But I swear it is not more complicated than that.
Well, I am very pro cookie. So I really like that quote. I need like a t-shirt with that on it. But cookies are the best. I mean, not all the time, but they're amazing. But you know, it's funny. I ran a marathon in 2019. That was a big personal goal of mine. And I was really surprised, because I actually gained weight while running the marathon. And then I thought about it. I was like, well, I'm running a lot of miles a week here, you know, in training and preparation. I'm also building muscle, obviously. But I was like, okay, I have to eat a little more. Like, I'm not eating junk food all day long, but that was a surprising thing for me. But I feel like that really helped me to understand what you were just saying. Like, sometimes you're going to eat a little more. Like, if you are pursuing a major goal like that, like, I want to run a marathon, like, yeah, you're going to need to up your calorie intake, because your body's burning so much, right? And so I just, like, I love that it's fluid, that it's not strict, that, like, depending on your life and where you are and how, like, I'm pregnant. So yeah, my body does not look the way it did 7 months ago, but you know, like, I have to adjust with what's happening in my life and, you know, what goals or what states I'm in. And so that's awesome, because it just gives you freedom and flexibility. And I am about freedom and flexibility. And it seems like most mainstream diets or fad diets you hear about are not about that. They are very rigid.
Yeah, very, very rigid would be my experience of most diets. And, you know, as a dietitian, what we really embrace is this idea of intuitive eating, meaning that we give our bodies what they need. Our bodies are pretty amazing, and they're very capable of telling us, I need more food, and actually even capable of telling us, like, hey, I need meat, I need salt, I need whatever it may be. I mean, it's incredible when we allow our bodies to communicate those things with us. And that takes time and practice, but I'm definitely a proponent of intuitive eating.
That is so much more freeing than following a strict dietary plan and counting all your calories all the time. Like, no, if it's your birthday, have a piece of birthday cake. Come on, right? Like, have some cake.
Sometimes I'm going to eat a cookie just because I feel like it.
Love that. Love that so much. Okay. So this is kind of along those same lines of, like, health and just kind of culturally, I think especially women, like, we're just inundated with messages about how our bodies are supposed to look. And the worst thing for me personally is when I see celebrities who, like, and I'm not, like, following the tabloids here, but, you know, you see, like, celebrities who had a baby, and then, like, 6 weeks later, they don't look like they had a baby at all. And they're like, I got my body back. And I'm like, okay, that's not my life. Like, no. And so I'm just, you know, there seems to be this push that, like, our worth is tied to how our bodies look. And so I'm really curious what you would say, knowing that you're a dietitian, knowing that you work in eating disorder and recovery, like, what do you say to that message?
Yeah, I think is where I'm going to kind of bring faith into the picture. Because what I would say to that cultural message that our worth is tied to our bodies is, never forget who made you. We've got this beautiful truth in our faith that we're made in God's image and likeness. And there's so much inherent worth and dignity that comes along with that. And I think it's important to bring that up here, because it's not something that our culture really reminds us of, but we know better. So I think, given that our faith reminds us that we have this inherent worth, we know that our worth has nothing to do with our bodies, that we that that does not matter. And I think cerebrally, like sometimes we know that and agree with it, but it's really hard to know that in our hearts and to put that into practice for ourselves, because we're always more judgmental of ourselves than others. So something that I ask clients to think about is, would you view your loved ones like that? Would you view your friends and family as a function of their bodies? Would you view their worth as something to do with how they look? And most of us would say, oh no, definitely not. But it's not really fair that we judge ourselves with that cultural message.
Right. And I mean, I love that. So for listeners, because I didn't really explain this yet, but Nina is a registered dietitian who works with Enunciation Wellness. And can you just explain real quick, like what it is exactly that you do? Because that would actually be really helpful for people.
I should have probably started out explaining that. I apologize.
I should have asked.
No, all right. Yeah. So I'm a registered dietitian. I work in private practice. I work for Enunciation Wellness, which was started by our wonderful founder, Brittany Bulkey. And our mission is to be faith-informed. So that means that I treat people with eating disorders and other nutritional concerns. Of course, it's no requirement that our clients have a faith background, but we operate with all of like the appreciation of faith behind our work. So really what I say is, it's kind of like if you've ever gone to like a Catholic hospital, right? So you know that they've got all of that behind their work, but it's not necessarily something that we always talk about in all of our sessions. So I hope that offers a bit of an explanation.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that, so my podcast is Catholic, it's Catholic Woman's Podcast. And I think that's something that we need to really say is that, like, we are faithful people and we know that like the Holy Spirit lives within our bodies. So yes, we want to take care of our bodies, but we also know like part of the beauty of our faith is that like people who are disabled are not any less worthy of love and dignity. People who have a certain body image are not any less able to receive God's love, and therefore they're not any less able to receive our love, and they are still worth love and dignity because they're made in the image and likeness of God. So I absolutely love that you brought up, like, never forget who made you, and never forget that, like, you are made in the image and likeness of God, no matter what you physically are capable of or incapable of, or like you, like there is nothing that can take away the fact that you are made in the image and likeness of God. Like, you wouldn't be here if you weren't. So I think keeping that in mind is so important. Okay, so I wanted to ask kind of I guess it's a personal question, but it's also not really a personal question because it's worth asking. I have three daughters and I'm pregnant with my first son, which is exciting. But when I was pregnant with my daughters, I did a lot of mom reading. And one of the things that was absolutely appalling to me is how early disordered eating can start, and especially in girls. Now, I was reading books that were geared towards moms of daughters at that point, so I'm not sure what eating and disordered eating looks like typically in, you know, a male child or even for men, but I know men do suffer from it. But for the interest of the fact that this is typically a women's podcast, I guess I just wanted to ask, like, what are some things that we can do as parents to help prevent eating disorders in our own children? And, you know, if it's easier for you to answer in terms of like, well, with daughters this, with sons this, or just broadly, you know, this can help your child no matter what their gender, that's fine. Just I wanted to share that I understand that there is a difference sometimes in the way that genders would approach this topic.
And you're right, there is. I think, you know, to answer this question, I think I can answer it broadly, because the way we as parents can help prevent some of this actually is really, I think, the same for both genders. So what I challenge all parents to do is to take an intuitive approach with food. I've already kind of mentioned that word, but really what that means is being inclusive of all foods. That's so important. for our sons and our daughters to grow up knowing that all foods in moderation are okay. And how can I incorporate everything and still be healthy without having food be like the central point of my life? So taking an intuitive approach with children is so important. Teaching them to listen to their hunger fullness cues. Hunger and fullness cues is also something that is very important with intuitive eating. We want kids to know it's okay to eat when they're hungry and it's okay to stop when they're full. And that goes back to that idea of trying to diminish how many times we're eating for some other reason than hunger, which is what can get us into problems in the first place. And then I always tell parents, like, leading by example, okay? So we can have the best intentions for our children if we don't want them to develop these disordered patterns with food. But if they see that in us, or certainly if they see concerns with body, concerns with weight, unfortunately, that will affect them. So that, I think, is tough. I'm a parent too, and that's tough to hear, but it's so true and so important to hear as well.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, one of the things that I was just shocked about is I was reading a book by a pediatrician, Dr. Meg Meeker, and she was talking about how, like, she's seen young girls in her pediatrician practice, and they have shown signs of eating disorders and poor body image. And it just breaks my heart for these girls, because, like, already childhood seems to be getting shorter and shorter. And then the fact that now there's these girls, because they're not even like teens, they're kids, having these issues with their body image. It just makes me feel so sad for them. So my oldest daughter is 7, and that's something that, like, I watch for it, because I want to make sure that, you know, she feels confident in herself and her abilities, and she knows that she's a great kid and that we're so proud of her and all she does. But I also know, like, I have to watch for this, because it's gonna, like, if it's not her, it's gonna be, you know, her friend at some point who's going to experience this. And that's not to be like Debbie Downer. It's just to say, this is really, really prevalent. Yeah. I can remember some friends of mine in high school who started having binging and purging episodes, and just, like, not knowing what to do or how to say, and just, you know, wondering what it was that was causing them to do it, and being grateful that I never did, but still feeling like, wow, like, I know how many people this has affected. Yeah.
And it is, it's heartbreaking how young it can start. When I first started working in eating disorder treatment, I was living in California, and I worked with clients, both men and, or boys and girls. I can't even say men and women, because they were 10. That was the youngest age that I worked with at the time.
They're like, little kids, like, you know, let them be kids.
It's heartbreaking to see people that young struggling with these problems. And I would also go to middle schools to do eating disorder prevention work. And I think there was part of me that was always kind of hoping that I was talking about these things and these thoughts for the first time. But when I would encourage involvement in the presentation, I was shocked by how many kids were like, yep, I know exactly what that means and how that feels. And again, these are middle schoolers. So it is happening younger and younger. So extremely important for us as parents to be aware of.
Right. Yeah. So we've kind of mentioned this, but I'm curious, like, what are some statistics that involve eating disorders that might, you know, surprise people who maybe haven't been exposed or haven't experienced it, or, you know, have just never realized that somebody close to them was struggling with this? Because I think probably every single person has somebody within, you know, a degree or two, like, maybe not your best friend, but a friend that you know who struggled with this. Like, I think we can probably say, like, this is more common than you think it is. But what are some statistics as a dietitian in the field who's working, you know, actively to help people recover that would surprise people?
Sure. Yeah, I know these statistics, and they still surprise me and, you know, hurt to hear, but I will share some of them with you. So the first one that I'll share with you really goes right into what we were just talking about. So by the age of 6, girls especially start to express concerns about their own weight or shape, and 40 to 60% of elementary school girls ages 6 through 12 are concerned about their weight or becoming too fat. And that concern endures throughout life. So that is a statistic from a body image handbook, a textbook from 2011. And I would wager or bet that while that research hasn't been updated, I am sure it's probably staying the same, if not getting worse. So yikes. Pretty heartbreaking.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh my gosh. Yeah. See, I knew. Yeah. I knew that it's starting younger and younger, and like age 6.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I know that one kills me. There's two others that I'll share with you. So this one, in a large study of 14 and 15 year olds, dieting was the most important predictor of developing an eating disorder. Those who dieted moderately were 5 times more likely to develop an eating disorder. And those who practiced extreme restriction, extreme dieting, were 18 times more likely to develop an eating disorder than those that did not diet.
I'm just trying to think about like what sort of diet I would have even had the thought to try when I was 14 or 15. Like, it wasn't until I went off to college and was really kind of in control of what I was eating. I mean, my parents took really good care of us, but yeah, like
that actually says a lot, right? So like if you see any type of dieting behavior, that should be a flag, because that statistic doesn't lie. 5 times more likely to develop an eating disorder with even moderate levels of dieting, and 18 times more likely with any type of significant dieting. That's huge.
Yikes. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. That makes me like, okay, I'm looking for dieting behavior now all the time. Are my kids trying to diet? I mean, I know she's only 7, and I know that the 2.5-year-old is just being a toddler, and like, she's not trying to diet when she's like, no, I don't want this, and throws her plate. That's just toddlerness. But yeah, yikes. Oh man. And then my middle daughter, she's 5.5. So I mean, like, but she still seems like a baby to me too. And yet they're already having these sorts of concerns, which is just out of this world, sad.
It is for sure. The last, I'll share one more statistic with you. So this one is a statistic from 2014. It says eating disorders have the 2nd highest mortality rate of all mental health disorders, and it's surpassed only by opioid addiction. And that hit me because, you know, I think we all are aware of the opioid epidemic that gripped this country. And to think that eating disorders have the 2nd highest mortality rate only to that, it goes to show that what we're talking about is extremely important, because eating disorders don't just affect our life, our quality of life, it can kill. And I think that resonates with me, of course, as a provider.
Right. And I mean, that's so scary as a parent, as a friend, as a woman. Like, we don't, you know, you don't want anybody to be suffering death in such an, I hate to say unnecessary way, but it is unnecessary. Like, an eating disorder is a disordered behavior, and it's not, like, that's not the will of God for us to experience that. That's our own sinful, prideful nature that's, you know, that inclination there. But also, I guess, I don't think I asked you this, but there's got to be quite a tie-in between eating disorders and mental health, right?
Absolutely. So an eating disorder is a mental illness.
Okay.
So there is definitely a crossover between what we call co-occurring problems. So that could be depression, anxiety, even drug use. Like, there are definitely overlap between eating disorders and other mental health issues.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that is just so interesting to think about. And I mean, it's not interesting in a good way, but it's definitely something that is important for us to be aware of. Okay. So we talked about this a little bit, but no, just kind of turning it to a positive right now. People can recover, right?
Absolutely.
People recover.
Yes.
Okay. So knowing that you work with Annunciation Wellness, knowing that you are about helping people to recover as well as to prevent eating disorder and disordered eating, what role would you say that faith plays in eating disorder and recovery?
I think faith can play a huge role in eating disorder recovery. You know, to me, I think it can play a part in every single step of the process. So if you think about the first steps of the process, when people are just seeking recovery or seeking help in general, our faith teaches us back to that idea of inherent worth and dignity. So our faith reminds us that we're worthy of seeking help, that we deserve that help. And that can be a huge part in just encouraging someone to step out of their comfort zone and want to get better. And then we think about, you know, the second step of the process. So being in treatment, being in recovery and working through that, faith can help us deal with roadblocks, because it just as part of the process, there's always going to be things that come up. Eating disorders don't go away quietly. They want to survive. So when we bring faith in and help us with those challenges, can help people get better, can help people overcome some of that. And then I think, you know, the last part of the process, making sure that we know we're never alone in that struggle, because recovery can take some time. And throughout that process, it's so important to know that we have someone by our side. We have God by our side helping us through all of that. And of course, not wanting to see us struggle. So I think faith can be a piece of all of it.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's part of our faith, is that our faith is wrapped up in everything. It's like, you know, the central cord in a braid. It's there. It's part of everything. Okay. So I don't think I asked you this question in the email, but I do want to ask, what does it look like if somebody comes to you and they say, I'm struggling with an eating disorder and I want help? Like, what does a typical recovery plan kind of look like? Like, what could somebody expect if they came to you with that scenario? And of course, everyone's scenario is different. So very broadly, very generally, but I think sometimes talking about like, this is how we might be able to start helping you can take some of the fear out of it and can help people with that first step.
Right. So one of the first things that I do is make sure someone has an entire treatment team behind them, because we want to make sure that every facet of that eating disorder is taken care of and that someone has support in all aspects. So when we talk about treatment team, we always want somebody to be working with a therapist or a psychiatrist, someone to deal with those cognitive aspects of an eating disorder. And then of course the nutritional side of things, a dietitian, myself. So we definitely want to make sure someone has at least those two components of their treatment team. Then from a nutritional perspective, what I start doing with a client initially is working through some of their behaviors and distortions around food. So what do you believe about food? Why do you believe that? And we start dissecting those things and talking about how the reality of nutrition differs from the eating disorder beliefs. And one of the very first things I do for a client is start them with a meal plan, because it can be really helpful to understand from a professional, this is actually what my body needs and this is what I should be eating, because eating disorders totally distort that. So you need someone to help you with that.
Right. Wow. Okay. No. And like, that doesn't sound scary. In fact, a diet sounds scarier. It's just in my 7-month pregnant opinion there, but so like it does. I mean, it sounds like, wow, like there's somebody looking out for me. There's somebody helping me through my thought processes around food, around nutrition, through my thought processes around why I'm struggling with this. And like, I love that it's comprehensive and that it's not just like, okay, here's your Band-Aid, it's fixed. Like, because like you said, it's the eating disorder is going to want to hang on. And so you have to really get at every component of it to make it go away and to make it be, you know, not an active problem. Although I am assuming that once you've experienced struggling with an eating disorder, you have to work really, really hard to not fall into it again. Is that a pretty fair assumption?
Yes. I think in the early parts of recovery, I think that people would say, yes, I'm working very hard. But I do believe there's sort of this idea in treatment, do you believe in the possibility of being recovered, period, with period at the end of that? Or do you believe in recovery, this longer process, or that somebody can never be fully recovered? So I believe that people can be fully recovered. And over the course of time, over the course of the recovery journey, you begin to think about the eating disorder less and less and less. So if you talk to somebody that has had long-term eating disorder recovery, those thoughts are not as present, and sometimes not present at all. So there is absolutely hope for people that they will get to that point where they don't feel like they're having to work so, so hard. But in the initial stages of recovery, yeah, I think you'll feel like you're working really hard for a good end though.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, I was talking with another podcast guest, and we were talking about therapy, actually. And we were talking about how, like, therapy is hard. And, you know, like, it's hard because you are being vulnerable. And if you want it to work, you have to be vulnerable. But it's also hard because you're uncovering these uncomfortable things about yourself that only you can identify and address, right? Like, your therapist just helps you do it. And so anyways, what you're saying really reminds me of that, but like, it's so worth it. And once you have started to do it, it just becomes easier to like identify negative thoughts, or easier to identify like, oh, that is, you know, my tendency to do this thing, and I'm not going to do that anymore. And so like, yeah, I think absolutely. There's definitely like, you have to be willing to put work in on the front, but the fact that you can then say like, no, I am recovered from this. I have moved to a new chapter of my life, and I'm not going to do that anymore. Like, yeah, you can. And I think that's amazing. So that is just very encouraging. So thank you for encouraging those who might be looking for some help. But okay, one of the things that I think is probably really, really hard is that sometimes we're kind of like, we need to mind our own business, right? So what would you say is the proper response, the proper loving response to a friend or a family member who identifies and has, you know, valid concerns that somebody is having an eating disorder, a disordered eating. And I'm not even just talking about like parent to child, because of course that relationship is different, but like friend to friend, what would you say is kind of like some red flags and the appropriate way to maybe bring up that you're concerned about that person that you care for?
That's a great question. That's something that I deal with a lot in my session. So the most important thing that you can share with someone is, I'm worried about you. I'm worried about you because, and if you lead with that, that has an impact on someone who is struggling. And that breaks down a lot of barriers and walls that people that are dealing with eating disorders build up to protect their eating disorder. Because even somebody that is miserable in their eating disorder protects it, because it's kind of the only way they know how to cope. So in order to not just be met with a ton of resistance, we have to share with someone the truth of why we're coming to them. And for most individuals, the truth is, I'm worried about you. But if you're talking to a loved one, certainly if you're a parent talking to a child, sometimes our instinct is to not lead with, I'm just worried about you. Sometimes we lead with all of the fear first. And that usually is what isolates people. So I'd actually say that that's the same approach, whether you're a parent or whoever you are approaching a loved one, is, I'm worried about you because.
Right. And so, you know, I'm thinking like, what are some, so we talked about some red flags for like people we're very close with, but what are some red flags for suspecting perhaps an eating disorder in somebody that maybe we don't live with, like a friend that we see periodically, because, well, it's a pandemic and, you know, things are a little different right now. But I remember this, this girl, wonderful girl, and I didn't see her over the course of a summer through high school. And then we saw her again in the fall, and everyone was like, oh my gosh, you lost so much weight. But she was bulimic. And so it was, you know, one of the things that I would assume to look for is like rapid, sudden weight loss, sudden weight change. But are there any other things to kind of look out for as far as, you know, like, I know this person, we're friendly, and we could be like better friends, and, you know, and it's not like we have to be everybody's keeper, but just kind of keeping an eye out for other people and being brave enough to stand up and say like, you have dignity, and this is not how God intends your body to be, type thing. Of course, there needs to be a relationship there, but I'm kind of digressing in what I'm trying to explain. But what would you say to that?
Yeah, to answer your question, I think, of course, there's those visual changes. If you see somebody that you care about and you see a significant fluctuation in their weight, of course, that is a red flag. And what I would say is be the first person to not just say, oh, wow, you've lost so much weight. Congratulations. Be the first person to say, are you okay? Because unfortunately, sometimes eating disorders can get fueled for a long time by people saying, wow, look how great you look. And unfortunately, that person might be internally struggling with an eating disorder. And if they're getting messages of, look how much weight you've lost, look how great you look, that can make things worse. So absolutely visually, if you see something, ask someone if they're okay. But other things to be on the lookout for, now granted, we're in the midst of a pandemic, so you might not be frequently eating with your friends, but if we get out of this and you start eating with friends again, if you notice people are turning down opportunities to go out for lunch, go out for dinner, go out for ice cream, something like that, if someone is constantly turning those opportunities away, that's a major red flag. And also behaviorally, if you notice major shifts in someone's mood, if they suddenly seem much more withdrawn, much more depressed, that is a concern as well.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I've always felt like so torn because I would hear people say things to people like, wow, like they've lost so much weight. Wow, they look so great. And then I would find out later that like, it wasn't a good thing, you know? I mean, we can agree eating disorders are not a good thing. And so that's something that I'm grateful that I at least now have the ability to kind of articulate, like, an eating disorder isn't good, even if it results in what looks like a positive outcome. And I think that's where this gets really tricky, is like, we all want to look a certain way. We all want to have like that opinion of, you know, people perceive us as worthy because we look healthy or we look great. Like how we talked about earlier, you know, the message of being health and, you know, fit in our society. And so I think like, that's one of the things that just kind of haunts me about my, like, this was like 15 years ago now, but this haunts me about my high school experience, was that, you know, there were so many people who were suffering from it, and yet it was seen and celebrated as a good thing because of the, you know, the outcome. Of course, internally, what happens to your body when you have an eating disorder is not good, but externally it looked good. So they were praised, which just makes me feel so, so, so sad. Yeah. Okay. Well, Nina, the last question that I really wanted to ask you is just in terms of, I'm kidding. I have one more question after this that I want to ask you.
No worries.
this question that I want to ask is just about preventative measures. And, you know, what are some ways that we as women in the world or at home right now because of the pandemic can work to prevent eating disorders from being such a big problem? Like if you could have a group of people partner with you, what would you say? Like, hey, this is what you need to do.
So I would say change starts from within. So we want to see these macro level changes, right? We want to see our culture shift. So valuing people for not what they look like and these big changes. And sometimes those seem extremely overwhelming, but those big shifts start with the changes that we make. So I would encourage everyone to think about how they can live differently and think about the little things that we do that actually support that idea that our image matters, that is somehow tied to our worth. So it can be as simple as taking a look at the magazines that you maybe purchase or the magazines that you look at when you go to the hairdresser or whatever it may be. Although we don't do those things anymore, right? Because of the pandemic. But when you do those things, think about the clothes that you buy, like what advertisements are being used. If we support places that continue to foster this idea that our worth is based on our appearance, unfortunately, we're contributing to that culture, even though we might not want to, we might not think about that. So just making those little shifts can have a huge impact. And then of course, making little changes about how we view ourselves, how we view our body. And actually, I think that really starts with how we talk about ourselves, how we talk about our own bodies and how we talk about food. It might seem insignificant, but if you talk about only being able to eat that ice cream because you went on a long hike or because you really deserve it. That's fueling this idea that food is for something other than enjoyment and nutrition. And that is kind of creating a problem. So I would say that if we assess how we live our lives and how we interact with food, that makes a big difference because people see that.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's, I was thinking about my workplace and how, like, over time it started that, you know, that, like, there was just this little bit of a cultural shift that happened that was really, it was really beautiful, actually. Like, some of us started bringing salads to work for lunch just because we like salads and they're, you know, they're good for us. And they, I love a good salad. It really makes me feel great when I eat a good salad. Like, it's a perfect lunch food for me. And so I was thinking about that and how, like, you know, just slowly over time, like, more and more people started bringing salads just because, like, hey, that salad looks good. Or, like, you have a hard boiled egg in there. Like, that sounds interesting. Like, just different things like that. And how, like, yeah, the little changes that we make, the little examples that we make might really change how somebody else perceives the world, which is crazy, but also really beautiful and really empowering. So thank you for sharing that. I am not saying that everybody needs to eat salad all the time. I just happen to really like them. My body feels really happy when I eat a lot of nutritious greens. Like, I'm pregnant, I'm growing a baby here. So my body's super pumped when I eat those, like, calcium fortified irons. Like, it's so excited. So,
like, I love a good salad. And that is a great example of you eating intuitively. So awesome.
Okay, good. It's like, and I put my dressing on that salad. Like, eat it with dressing because dressing is delicious. Like, no one wants to eat a raw salad. That's gross. So anyways.
Yeah, when people see my salads, they're like, wow, that actually looks good because I've got, like, everything in it. It makes it so much better, right?
Yeah, so good. Okay, so this is my last question for you, Nina. So thank you for putting up with my pregnancy brain and feeling disorganized in all of my thoughts, but that's okay. At this point, it's just par for the course. But I wanted to ask about people who might want to follow up with you. How could they get in contact with you? Or you are in Colorado, perhaps?
I am in Colorado, yes.
Okay.
I am in Colorado, so that's where I live in practice. There are a few other states that I am able to see clients in, just given licensure laws in every state. So right now I can see clients in South Carolina, Colorado, Michigan, Arizona. So anybody living within those states is welcome to contact me. I know, kind of like a random smattering of states. And even
I love it.
Right.
So I'm in Michigan. So yeah, go Michigan.
Good, yes. But even if you don't live in one of those states, if you're listening and you want to contact me, I can always point you to resources that can help you within your own state. So you're welcome to check out our website, which is annunciationwellness.com. Easy to remember. You can contact me by email. So it's nina.gazzo@annunciationwellness.com. You're welcome to reach out to me in all those aspects, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you so much. So that is so funny that you have this, like, bizarre reciprocity of states, because I have I held a teaching degree. It's since expired, but I was not teaching, so there's no point in taking the master's level classes and paying to do it. But anyways, so I'm trained as a teacher, but, like, the reciprocity thing, like, it's bizarre. So you are not the only career field that has reciprocity in really bizarre places. Like, you know, like, you just have to take another test to practice in Illinois. Like, it was strange, but anyways, it made me laugh because I totally get what you're talking about. And I'm super pumped that my friends who live by me can contact you and actually receive help from you as well. But are there any, like, good go-to websites or anything you can recommend right away just for people who might want to learn more?
For sure. So NEDA, which is the National Eating Disorder Association website, is so helpful. It has resources, support for people who are struggling with eating disorders, for parents, for caregivers. It has screening tools. So if you're wondering, am I somebody that's struggling with this? You can actually take their screening tool and see if you fit some of these characteristics. They also have a referral list of treatment providers that are specialized in eating disorder treatment. So that is a great first place to look. If you're worried about somebody that has an eating disorder, you're trying to get them help, I always encourage people to look and see if they have treatment centers in their area. And treatment centers are a good place to reach out to, even if that person doesn't ultimately need to go to a treatment center. Treatment centers keep really good lists of who works with eating disorders in that area, and you can get a lot of resources from that. But check out the NIDA website. Super helpful.
Great. Thank you so, so much. I am so excited and so grateful that you were able to hop on to Heart Home Faith with me today and to talk about this. And I know that it's been roughly an hour and I feel like we've like delved in, but we've also just barely scratched the surface because, you know, in the field of medicine and in the field of mental health and eating disorders, like everybody's eating disorder who experiences one, it's their own, right? So like you have to be kind of general when you talk about it in a general way, but know that like if someone is specifically experiencing an eating disorder and seeking help, they will get very specialized help for their specific needs, which I think you mentioned earlier, but I'm so glad that you were just able to shed some light on this topic. I really, really, really happy that it's being made more aware, and that culturally it's being seen, well, maybe not, but at least in my own experience, like with my sister who's brought so much to my attention and then reading books about, you know, parenting and being the mom of daughters, just seeing that this is prevalent, but there are things we can do to help it not be so prevalent. And I feel like that is just a great mission for all of us as Catholic women because we were made in the image and likeness of God. So right. I just never love how it ties in.
Yes, there's so much that can be done. So, you know, I gave some scary statistics and I know we talked about some tough stuff, but there's so much that can be done in terms of treatment and prevention. So don't be afraid to seek help and seek help for people that you care about. Make sure people know that you love them, you care about them, and you see them and you want them to get help. And there's so much that can be done.
Absolutely. And, you know, I just love that ultimately we're God's and He is in charge of our lives and He's in control of us. And, you know, if we give everything to Him, then we can expect that He's going to pour so many blessings into our lives. And even if that blessing comes in the form of reaching out and seeking help for the first time ever, just knowing that like, this is not what God intended for me, for anybody that I love, for anybody I care about. And we have tools and He's given us the gifts of, you know, knowledge to be able to treat these things. I think that is just like such a positive place to end. So I'm so, so thrilled. Thank you so much for letting us end with the positive because that's so important.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode in honor of National Eating Disorder Awareness Week, which is, of course, going on this upcoming week. I believe it's the final week of February, February 21st through 28th of this particular year, 2021. You can reach out, you can find Nina, you can find resources at the NEDA, N-E-D-A website, or you can find Annunciation Wellness on Instagram at Annunciation Wellness. I promise that you will find so many resources. If you need the help, all you have to do is ask. Until next time, my dear, dear friends, my brothers and sisters, may you feel as loved and as worthy as you are.